black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm going to die out here. No one's ever going to know.
And I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. It was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me. And this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sir? See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you this evening. Going to be speaking to Doug, who was out hunting, and he ran into one of these creatures. And he had sent me this email. I thought about posting the whole thing to the blog. It was such a well-written encounter that he had with this creature. But everything leading up to the creature, from it smacking the tent to doing what it did, and then eventually seeing it, made me wonder why the creature would smack the tent the way it did. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. I'd love to talk with you. I'd love to discuss your encounter. If you get a chance, check out the website too as well, sasquatchchronicles.com. You can click on the shop at the top and get merchandise. Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Doug to the show. Doug, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to share my story.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to have you on the show. And like we were just saying before we went on air, you know, the encounter you sent me, it's 15 pages, and I thought about posting the whole thing to the website because it was so well written. And as you and I were just joking, you know, I'm a terrible writer. People would be shocked to have a blog because I'm absolutely terrible at it. But, you know, I give it 110%. But
thanks. Yeah.
But I appreciate you coming on and sharing the whole experience of when you guys were hunting, because it really fascinated me. And the more I thought about, I don't want to ruin it for the audience. It knocking on the tent or whacking the tent and then seeing it afterwards. But for the audience, I don't want to do any spoilers. If you would, Doug, I'll give the mic to you and tell us what you were out doing and what you ran into.
All right. Yeah, let me just preface this a little bit. I have been writing for a long time, and when I sent you that story, I thought, well, I wonder if he really wants this much or not. And I couldn't believe how fast you got back to me. I appreciate that. That really got the excitement going around the house. People were going, wow, he's back to you already. But, I write every year, and I try to put a story into this manuscript I've been doing. And I plan to self-publish it someday, you know. That seems to be the way to go these days. But these annual stories, usually they've got these unbelievable twists and scary things happening anyway, but never would have imagined that something like this would have happened. And I went on your website last night and looked on there, and I saw one of your quotes, and if you don't mind me quoting you, you wrote, "I never really believed in these creatures before, but this encounter deeply changed my life forever." And did that strike a chord for me. So yeah. I really like the fact that you created this kind of a safe outlet for people like me to come on and, you know, discuss or share these unique experiences, you called it, and I thought that was well worded too. So just allowing me to come forward without any fear of, oh, like, you know, disbelief or reproach, or it's kind of refreshing to have your sight to be able to do that. So
yeah, of course.
Great. Thanks. Yeah. And one thing, as I listened to your podcast, we just drove back from Florida and I listened to it all the way. I liked your approach because you're such a good listener. You didn't seem judgmental at all, you know, and that's kind of what I've been coming up against so far whenever I tell the story. So, and looking through your podcast list, I was amazed at that huge selection that you have available there. And it makes me think that, yeah, there really must be something to all this, you know, if you've got that many people out there reporting these things. And they're all a little different, but they're really great to listen to. And then when you hear it, you can really think about it. And I just got to say that when I drive, I get kind of sleepy, and I'm kind of a one to take those five-hour energy drinks. But, man, listen to these podcasts. There's no better way to stay awake while you're driving long distance than way better than the five-hour energy drinks.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for the kind words.
All right. And, but so, you know, every time I start to talk to anybody about this, I get kind of going on my, you know, my chest. The breath quickens and my heart starts to race. And it's just because, you know, when you retell a story, it makes you relive it. And it's like going through it all over again. And you can probably hear that in my voice now. I'm already getting a little worked up. But, you know, it's just, and I could hear it in the voices of the people that you interviewed on previous podcasts that, I bet you kind of, as a good listener, you can hear that too, I'm sure. So,
oh yeah,
bear with me if I get a little worked
no, no,
up,
but, yeah. There's no reason to be nervous. It's just you and I, and you know, it's you hit on something there, and I don't mean to cut you off, but you hit on something there. When I talk to people, you know how many times I've spoken to people over the phone that don't want to come on the air, that break down in tears. And I'm talking about, you know, not, you know, weak people. I'm talking about strong people you wouldn't expect to break down in tears. I mean, I've had judges break down in tears. I've had FBI agents break down in tears as Wow. they're recounting their story and or recounting what happened to them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is, I try to create a safe place for people. You know, you always have your critics, you always have your, and I always wonder why they listen to the show. I always wish they'd go listen to some other show. Don't listen to my show anymore. Go listen to some other show. If you're here to bash the witness or whatever, go listen to someone else's show. This isn't the show for you. But there's no reason to be nervous. And like I said, it's, I love hearing from hunters. Hunters are my favorite. People always ask me, you know, who's your favorite witnesses? Is it the judge? Is it the cop? Is it the people of prominence? No, it's the hunters. Honestly, I love hearing from hunters because they're out there, and there's no BS with hunters. I've never been out with hunters. There's no BS with hunters. They will tell you what they saw, and they may not come out and say it was a Sasquatch, but they'll say, hey, it wasn't a man and it wasn't a bear. I don't know what it was. And so I love hunters. And so I really appreciate you being on, and there's no reason to be nervous at all.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it just the nature of the beast here. A little background. I was just, you know, I was in the mountains with my son this time. He was 23 years old and he really hadn't taken up hunting yet. He didn't have any preference points to draw an elk or deer tag is what we go for. And so we got him a small game license, and he was hunting grouse. And snowshoe rabbits were up in the area, so we're thinking maybe he might have some luck with small game. And it was kind of a big area, so we bought him a GPS, and I wanted to make sure that he was safe, you know, because having been lost in the woods before and having talked to you about that a little bit, you know how scary that is. The days prior to GPS were a little more challenging when you actually had to have a compass and a map. But sometimes those storms come in on you and darkness falls and there you are. So I didn't want that to happen to him. So I was trying to make sure that he was with me the whole time. And so anyway, we hunt up here about an hour and a half west of here is a town called Georgetown, and we go up a pass called Guanella Pass, and a little town of Grant and Bailey are on the backside of this pass. If you drive up this whole four-wheel drive road, it's the rocks coming up out of that road will definitely keep the tourists at bay, and you can't just bring in any vehicle, so we kind of pick our way up there very slowly. And we found this great little campground up there just off this end of this old road. And if you kept on going, you'd hit Waldorf. I was telling you about this old ghost town. It's an old gold mining camp. And it's all ruins now, made out of the buildings made out of white quartz blocks. And really pretty neat up there. You're about 12,000 feet there. And our camp is around 11,000 feet. And we just set up a tent, or two tents if there's a couple of us. And we do everything on foot. And, you know, if we happen to get lucky and get any animals down, then, you know, we pack those out on our backs. We don't have four-wheelers or horses, so we're kind of doing it ourselves. And this was kind of neat. We've always, my best friend Doug, who is my hunting partner since the 90s, and my name's Doug, so we call ourselves the Doug and Doug Show when we hit the trees. And, you know.
Yeah.
So, he's one of the greatest guys I've ever met. He's like a brother, and he's just really super enthusiastic about everything. And like the first time I went with fishing with him, the game was on. You could just tell that we were going to be friends forever. So he kind of got me into it. I was more of a fisherman prior to the, you know, the hunting part of my life. But my wife's dad, Jack, was this old French-Canadian up in northern Wisconsin, and he was a bow hunter, you know, for whitetails up there, and he talked me into getting a bow. And so my first 8 years hunting in Colorado were with a bow that he helped me, you know, get all the equipment for and helped me learn how to shoot it well. And I never got a darn thing, but, you know, I got a few shots off and some great stories. But what a, you know, great education that is, packing a bow around. Talk about having to get close. That's really... Anyway... So, yeah, it was 2011, and September, that second week of September is our elk and deer season. The muzzle loader is what we decided to finally go to. We went from bows to centerfire rifles, and that seemed like it was too easy. After getting a couple of elk, we decided to make it a little more challenging. We went to the single-shot muzzle loaders, and these old Hawkins-style 50 calibers are kind of a challenge. They don't always go off when you pull the trigger, you know. Sometimes you just hear a pop and it doesn't ignite, you know. And so that's happened quite a few times. So it is challenging. All the planning and time you spend getting up there and packing in and getting there and in the spot, and to have a misfire like that's kind of disheartening. But it's all part of the challenge, and we love it. So here's my son Gabe along with us, and he and I were sticking together. And so Doug was in camp with his one of his partners in a tree service, the ground crew guy named Matt. Okay, and those two guys were out. Matt was bow hunting, and Doug was the muzzle loader. And my buddy Doug had to leave early out of camp, get back to Denver. And his son had a soccer game, so he was the coach, and he had to get back down. So Doug was not there when this all happened, but Matt was up on top bow hunting when Gabe and I spent 2 days in the field, long days, saw a lot of elk, but always the wrong sex, you know, or saw deer, which we didn't have tags for, and Gabe pressed the ridge tops. He's like a billy goat, you know, being young and youthful, you got all that energy. He could fly up the mountain. You know, I could see him just cruising up there looking for grouse. So we had a good time just checking everything out. We'd come back to camp that first night, and the next day we started at 4 a.m. and drank coffee, talked about our plan. We decided to try a different route this second day into some new country. And we saw a lot of fresh signs, so we knew that might be a good way to go. And as we went that day, we really got into some thick, elky tracks and wallows. It was pretty amazing. We were getting excited, and that went on for miles through this kind of deep, dark, elky part of the plot that we were hunting. And we kind of took a nap. You know how you get kind of burned out in the middle of the day? You're kind of like, oh, I need a nap. And that does help refresh you. So after doing that, he decided to go up on the ridge again and look for more grouse. And I could see him go up. And I just kept a constant vigil over the meadow I was sitting on and waited for him to come back down. He had seen quite a few marmot, didn't see any grouse, but as it got later, 3 o'clock, he came down, and we said, well, you know, it's time for us to kind of press back. I want to get back to camp with you, and watch you use your GPS, make sure you know how to get back to camp. There were no trails leading into camp. Camp is in the middle of the forest, and so pretty tough to find without a GPS. So we did the work and got back down through the timber, and we made it back about 4 or 5 o'clock. So we'd been out there for about 14 hours or something, and we were pretty tired, but we got back to camp safely, and it was a good ending to a day. And dropping those heavy packs off, that always feels so good. Throw down your rifle and take off all those layers, you know. So we guzzled some vitamin drinks and got our fluids replenished. And like we always do at the end of a day, we want to discharge those muzzle loaders because, you know, that powder will absorb any moisture out of the atmosphere. And sometimes if you don't change it out the next morning, you're going to have a dud. So I put up a target there in camp and checked to make sure the sights were still on. And after the concussion, you know, the smoke clear, I could see the rifle was still on. And then Gabe was kind of anxious to get some practice in, so he had this shotgun that I'd given him, and he shot at an old tin can a couple times. And then we thought, well, if you're shooting grouse, let's try a plastic bottle up in the air. So we threw that thing a dozen times in the air, and he hit it a few times. It was pretty great. I said, well, good, then you're ready. Okay, so we swabbed out the barrel with the cleaner and, you know, packed them away for the night. And then a few raindrops started speckling the ground, and here we are in September. That's not the rainy season here. That's usually like now in May and June sometimes. So we were kind of, oh, well, it's going to rain. So the sky was darkening, and we realized maybe this sprinkling wasn't going to stop or blow over anytime soon, looking at the sky. So we just, you know, like I wrote in there, little did we know that impending rainstorm, man, that was the least of our worries. So he said, well, here it comes. And he said, I'm going to cover the woodpile, he said. And I said, well, get your gear and let's get in the tent because it's going to let loose. And we got in that tent and started zipping things up, and that rain increased, and the downpour came. And that's pretty rare that it rains that hard. We couldn't believe how loud it was in the tent, just coming down. And we were glad to not be outside on the mountainside, which Matt was. So we kind of thought of him up there on the mountaintop getting hammered in that rain. But so we kicked back on the cot, and the loud sound of that rain hitting the top of the tent was just deafening. But so I looked over, and Gabe put his iPod earpieces in, and he laid back, resting his eyes. And the sound of all that deluge outside kind of just made it, like, really ideal for catching up on some shut-eye. So, you know, I think we were both due for a cat nap. So we slipped into this well-needed naps, and I was really relaxed as the rain fell. And I don't know how long we were out like that, but we awoke suddenly to a loud whack, and I just opened my eyes in time to hear the zip as this smack on the top of the tent, the ceiling up at the top, which is about 7 feet up. You can stand up in the tent. And the force caused, you know, the fabric to conform around whatever object it was during the storm outside. And it was almost like nighttime outside. And, you know, it was still daylight out, but it was so dark. It was about the diameter of a catcher's mitt slipping off the top of the ceiling there. And this, it's pushed in about 6-8 inches down into the tent, and the bulge disappeared. I heard that zipping sound, almost like when you rub nylon together and you slip off it. And Gabe sat up, and that had been just above his head, and he whispered to me, "What the hell was that?" And I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and like, "I don't know." And we laid there, and a first sense of alarm went off, and I just couldn't quite think of what would be hitting the tent in broad daylight in the middle of a downpour like it was. I thought, maybe it was a bird flying through the forest and in that storm and hit the tent, or just a huge pine cone maybe had fallen out of the tree or a branch, but there was nothing still on the roof. So we were kind of groggy still, and we didn't feel any real sense of urgency. I listened to see if there was a bird flapping around on the ground outside the tent. Didn't hear anything else. That impact was just about, if you were standing up, it would have been right about eye level. So we settled back onto the cots and kind of looked at each other, kind of slowly closed our eyes and dismissed that incident, I guess, just for a little more sleep. And the sound of that rain again, it was sort of soothing, and fell asleep again. It wasn't too long later, whack! And this time the impact slapped onto the east side of the tent ceiling. And it was all identical to the first one. Again, you could hear it kind of zip off the top. And then I thought, what are the odds that two birds could have, made some poor aviation judgments like that? And then knowing that it wasn't just some errant bird crashing into our tent, I started thinking, well, maybe it's something else. First thing I thought, maybe it was Matt out there hunting, and he had maybe returned to do a practical joke on us, right? Or I thought then, if it wasn't him, then maybe it was a bear. Thinking that maybe if it was a bear, I thought, oh gosh, we had our packs, but we didn't have any food in them, and we had no food in the tent, and we were always really careful about that. You don't want to track bears into your camp, especially into your tent, because they will come in your tent if you have food in there. And we've learned that over the years. You got to be really vigilant about that. And you can put food in your vehicles. You can hang it in trees, and if that's done right, that can work, but never in your tent. And they can find it wherever it is. They're good climbers, and if you hang it on a rope up in a tree, they can even problem solve and, tightrope walk across that to get at it. But here it was kind of broad daylight, and I kind of doubted that a bear would be out there in open daylight like that, searching for food. Usually they come at night. I was in camp at a different camp one time when the full moon was out, and I'm laying there. I had no food in my tent, but I heard some snuffling, and I looked over, and on the tent wall was a perfect silhouette of a bear. And it was only 3 or 4 feet away from me.
Oh, wow.
And I just kind of froze up and didn't say a word, and watched him and heard him walk around the tent, woofing and grunting and snuffling under the edge of the tent. Luckily, there was no food in there, so he did finally leave. But he did that 3 nights in a row, and by the fourth night, I'd had it. I decided to scream at him, scare him off, and when I did, I had no voice. I screamed with all my might, and it came out like a whisper. It was the weirdest thing. It was just a little squeak, squeak, and the sound of my squeaking voice scared this thing off. I could hear him running. But bears are nothing to mess with. You got to be really careful. And so anyway, Matt was the one I thought it might be, and Gabe called out, "Ha ha, very funny, Matt." And I kind of listened to see if there was some kind of a snicker or a giggle or something outside. But you got to remember, the rain is still pouring here, and it's really loud. And we couldn't hear anything, no laughing, no sound except that rain. And then Gabe, I figured his vocalization, if it was a bear, would have sent, the bear running off. And there was no sound of a bear running off. I never heard any snuffling, grunts, or snorts or anything. Or, that heavy breathing that bears make. Well, I thought, well, if it's a bear, it's to hit that high on the 10, it would have to be standing way up on its hind legs. It'd have to be a huge bear. And the base of my tent is wider than the top, so it angles down and outward. So if there were no, you know, footprints on the base of the tent area, so whatever it was standing outside the base of the tent, reaching all the way to the center of the top, which I figure was, the base is probably 10 feet wide, so it had to reach in like 5 feet from its upright stand to touch the top of the tent. I also figured if it was a bear, maybe the claws probably would have hooked that thin nylon and maybe snagged it or ripped the material or something.
Yeah.
When it pulled its paw off. But so now we'd had these two thumps on the tent, and I started feeling like we better be quiet. And I just kind of did that signal to Gabe, like finger on the lips, like don't say anything else. So don't let them know that we're inside, but, you know, a bear would have been able to smell us anyway. So I just kind of decided to just say nothing and just see what happens. And that tent was zipped up tight, and we do that so we don't get anybody who might travel through camp and gawking into the tent, you know, and we zip everything up good. But nothing worse than, you know, going out in the field for the day and having left the window unzipped a little bit and come back after a rainstorm or a snowstorm and find all your sleeping gear and sleeping bags and stuff soaking wet. I've done that. So anyway, this time we were closed up tight. I thought about maybe unzipping a window to see what was out there, and that rain was so dark, though, I don't think I would have been able to see much. But in doing so, I probably would have scared it off. And I was thinking, could it be my buddy Doug? You know, did he return from Denver or something? But his truck was gone, and so I knew it couldn't have been him. So at that point, I was still thinking maybe it was Matt messing with us. So we kind of laid back and closed my eyes, and Gabe did too. And it's probably 10, 15 minutes later, whack, on the top of the tent again, man. A third strike, just boom. And this time I was awake in a hurry, and I saw the impression, saw it zip off the top, and it hit the top of the tent on a third panel, a different panel. And I thought, oh, this has to be a bear, you know, it's this persistent. I thought, I just better wait and see what, and my gun was not loaded. And Gabe had that 410 shotgun, but I didn't think those little pellets would help much, you know. So we were both awake and kind of felt like the tent was starting to shrink, you know. And then I was, who in their right mind, if it's not, you know, if it's not a bear, if it is a total stranger or something, who would dare come into a camp of hunters, you know, and start whacking on the tent? You know, and these guys might, you know, these hunters could very likely be armed, and so you'd think that an average person if thinking about doing that would maybe think twice before doing something risky like that. If you were entering a campsite of hunters, you'd probably call out as you came into camp just to let everybody know that you were there. You might say, anybody home, or you might want them to not overreact and maybe shoot you and try to defend themselves.
Yeah, you're right.
So anyway, that's what's pouring through my mind at the time, and I'm thinking, well, why would a bear be out? Maybe, you know, if their smell's really well-developed, and, you know, I've read a lot about bears, heard a lot of bear tales, and wouldn't they be able to smell us inside the tent? And you'd think that'd be enough to have them not come near. But, so we had hiked pretty hard that day, and, yeah, we had to smell like humans, you know. And even our firearms were inside the tent, and you'd think a bear would probably easily be able to smell that gunpowder, and that would alarm them. But why would it be standing up, you know, like that, trying to smack just the top of the tent? And, you know, I think a bear would probably root around the base first, you know, like I've seen them do. And if it was a bear, it was definitely a black bear, not a grizzly. I think you probably, I don't know if you've read about the grizzlies here. We probably used to have them, but there are no more grizzlies here. The last one was being killed back in the 70s by a hunter on horseback in the San Juan Mountains down south. And, you know, I was thinking,
yeah, and you would think if it was a bear, too, it would fall into the tent. It wouldn't just smack it with its hands. It would actually fall into the tent.
Yeah,
because
if it stood up,
top
it would probably
heavy.
Fall forward
yeah,
into the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I used to be a river guide on the Snake River up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, for about 15 years, and had a lot of stories there. Up in Yellowstone, while I was there, a fellow from Wisconsin back in 1986, a grizzly actually opened up his tent wall, reached in and grabbed him in his sleeping bag and dragged it outside and then mauled him. And then
by the
time they got some rescuers to him, they found him. He had been partially eaten, and investigating it further, they came to the conclusion that he had fixed dinner. He made some bacon and eggs, and the bacon had splattered on his clothes, and he went to bed in the same clothes. And, you know, grizzlies love bacon.
Yeah.
And I'm sure black bears do, too, but, you know, I don't think black bears are known to tear people out of their
tent. No, not usually. Black bears are usually more skittish than grizzly bear. They're not as ballsy as grizzly bears. So you guys hear the smack. You think it's your buddy Matt, who's still hunting, coming up and messing with you guys. And then what happens next?
You know, yeah, and a bear, if you're going to be attacked by a bear, most black bears, it's if you corner them or you startle them, or if it's a sow, you know, with cubs, then that's probably where you're going to have most black bear attacks. So I wasn't convinced, yeah, that these were caused by a bear. So what was it? Like you say, I think I was kind of thinking Matt still. And so the rain fell for a little while longer, and then it stopped. And a storm blew over. Sun came out, skies cleared, and Gabe was awake, and I was kind of coming awake too. And Gabe decided, I'm going to get up and get a fire going. So he got his coat on, went out, took the top off the wood, and got a good one going. He always did love to build fires as a kid, so he could get a fire going quickly, as you know, a lot of kids are good at that. Yeah. So he had this fire going on, so I got my coat and went out and pulled up a chair and joined him and sat there around the campfire. Felt pretty good because things had cooled off quite a bit. And you're just kind of sitting there staring at the flames. You know how fires can kind of mesmerize you. So I'm trying to sort out the events of what had just, you know, transpired and trying to reflect about it, and weren't saying much about it, just sort of thinking. But we sat there, and we noticed some movement up in the trees, uphill from camp, and up on the mountainside, we could still see a portion of the trail up there, and we watched Matt coming down off the mountainside, and he was marching down that trail. The cirque he was in was about an hour's hike up above, so he was getting close to camp, and we could see him, recognized his camo gear, and he was carrying a bow. You know, here in Colorado, muzzleloader season overlaps with archery season, so bow hunters get the first crack at it, just like it probably should be, and then as we got closer, you could see this big smile on his face, so you knew something was up, and he comes strolling into camp. And he comes around the tent and comes over to the fire ring, and he slings off his gear, and he starts just right away telling us all about what had just happened for him. And it was pretty obvious he was excited because he just had a close encounter with some deer. And he was up there, he saw the deer, and he got a shot at it, and the deer sidestepped the arrow, missed it, but it didn't run. So he was able to get a second arrow on. When he took the shot, it jumped, and he thought maybe he'd hit it, but it ran off. And so he started flagging the little trees and stuff nearby to mark the deer's path and the spot where he shot from. And he thought, okay, he was stuck in that rainstorm then too. So he decided to hike back to camp and come back in the morning and see if he could find the deer or any sign that he'd hit it, you know, give it overnight. And so here I, looking at him, it was pretty neat to see him be so excited. And yeah, you sure that this kid was just hooked, you know, and he was pretty involved in his telling of his story. And I kind of had a grin on my face, and he starts rattling off of these details, and we're asking him questions, and I'm looking at him, and behind him, from where I was looking at him, the tent was behind him, you know, off 10, 15 yards away. And so this is where the story kind of goes a little more surreal. You know, I said in my story I'd put a hand on the Bible if that meant you'd believe me, but I looked at him. I said, so what did you do when you took the shot? Did it feel like the shot? And he starts talking, and I'm looking at him, and then I realize my view of him, I see this movement through the trees behind the tent going from right to left. So I immediately locked onto that, and I could see this broad back figure slipping through the trees, really tall. And it was a light gray, and that really caught my eye, because we're always looking for deer, and the big timber bucks turn gray. You know, when they're younger, they're more of a cinnamon brown color. And I kind of, whoa, I said, what the? And I looked, and it now was kind of past the trees and starting quartering away from me. And I looked, and that's when I really noticed that its shape. I could see its V-shaped physique, man. It had this really broad, muscular shoulders, and it came down very narrowly to its lower back, and the gray hair on its head continued without any break right down onto its neck, right then down onto its massive shoulders and its back. And I thought that was really weird, because people up here during the hunting seasons don't go around without shirts on, you know. And, you know, people wear vests, orange jackets, and when you're hunting in the high country. And this being wore nothing, you know. It was quartering away. I didn't see its face, but I saw its arms and shoulder and back and head. And it, Matt saw my eyes shift away from his eyes when he was telling the story, and he cocked his head over for a quick view to see what I was looking at. The thing had already gone below the horizon line. I jumped up, he stopped talking, and I took off, and he followed me. And I think he thought we were going after a deer or something, so he didn't say much. He just followed me, and I took off. I hustled, and I ran up that bank, past the tent, down the draw, over around to the left side into the woods where I was seen it heading, and Matt was right behind me. We swung down, and I think we probably got 30, 50 yards down where it should have been coming through, and we moved in to have a look around and stood there and heard nothing. After a couple of minutes, it was pretty clear that whatever it was had passed on by and had to be traveling pretty fast to elude us like that. I don't think it saw us coming, so maybe it heard us, but we got over there really quickly, hoping to get another look at it. But we walked slowly all the way up to the very place where, you know, it had slipped through those trees when I initially saw it. We walked all around looking on the ground for any footprints, and didn't find anything, because there was like foot deep forest duff, you know, the pine needles and pine cone seeds and things that had built up over decades probably. So walking back, I thought it was kind of funny, because Matt was going, what were we chasing, you know? And I'm going, I don't know, you know. And whatever it was, you know, standing straight up. And he kind of, really? Because he thought maybe we're, you know, going after a deer or an elk or something. But we came back to camp and tried to explain to Gabe back there what we just chased after. And Matt and Gabe hadn't seen what I did, so they weren't freaked out by my sighting, but
you know, my mind was just kind of, I couldn't fit it in, you know, I don't know if you've, I read about just a little blurb about your sighting, and I don't know how you felt right after it, if you were like, okay, what do I do with that, you know? Have you ever been kind of, how'd you feel after you, your sighting was back, what, in 2014 or something?
2012. Confused and frightened, I would say, because it wasn't running away from us. It was anything but running away from us. But I would say confused and frightened, I would say, are the two biggest feelings I had at the time. Go ahead.
Oh, was it the last thing you probably actually expected to see? And so...
I wasn't thinking Bigfoot at the time. I was thinking we just ran into monsters is what I thought. I didn't even think Bigfoot at the time. I really thought we had run into monsters. And so, yeah, it's just confusion, just complete confusion on what is going on. And there is that moment. Your situation is a little bit different because it was retreating. Our situation, they weren't retreating. But there's definitely confusion. There's fright, and not really. It's almost surreal. You're not really sure what's going on. Like, is this real? Is this reality? Is this? You know, it's hard to explain. I guess to the listeners until you see it, because you're like, okay, that's not a bear. That's not a man. I don't know what that thing is. It's not a gorilla. I don't know what that thing is. I really don't have any explanation for it. And that's kind of how I felt.
How tall were the beings you saw?
The one that we saw, the biggest one, the rest of them weren't this big, but the biggest one I would say was about 9 feet tall, which was huge. And, you know, he was, you know, I don't want to interrupt your encounter with mine, but it was very much terrifying. I was terrified. And there's not much on this planet that terrifies me. I mean, I've seen ugly things that people do. I've seen ugly things that animals do. I mean, and this was something different. This was something I'd never experienced before. I'd never seen anything that big before. And it was terrifying. It was terrifying, I guess, more or less for the size, the way they're reacting. That's what terrified me the most. But if I had to sum it up all in one word, I'd say confusion. Complete confusion on what was going on and what this thing is. And how far away from you was this thing as it was retreating away from you?
No more than 30 yards. And, you know, I have pretty good vision. Probably the last time I checked, it was 2015, you know, so I can see long distance clear. I can still see deer way out, you know, 100, 200 yards out, enough to use iron sights on the muzzleloader, so... I know what I saw. It was as clear as a bell, perfect focus, and I could clearly see the hair, continuation on its head, down its neck, you know, which I found kind of interesting, and right onto its back. And the gray, I kind of thought, wow, it must be an old one or something, you know, like it was already getting up there in years, or I don't know how old these things will get, but it wasn't, you know, you usually hear about black, and or maybe red, long red hair or something, but this is all about the same length hair, and it was mostly, there was some black undertones on its back and stuff, but a lot of gray mixed in, and
so you're talking...
I didn't know what to think about it, and I don't think he was threatening us. He was kind of messing with us, I think, in the tent, you know, and then he kind of retreated. So I didn't feel that fear, but I did not know how to, you know, file it away in my mind because it didn't make any sense. And so I think I got kind of quiet, you know, and around the campfire that night. I really didn't know what to do with that, you know. And now for 6 years later, I'm still not sure what to do with it. That's why I'm kind of glad that I'm able to get it out there and just at least tell you what I'm saw and what I've been thinking and kind of going through these years. But a lot of people, when I tell people, they go, what drugs were you taking or what were you drinking? You know, that always comes up. You probably heard that too.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, both of those answers, I say nothing, but like this one, you know, you after you hear this account, people will say, what,
ask me if I was seeing things and say, yeah, I guess I was. Yeah. More accurately, I was a seeing thing, you know.
Yeah, well, if you're talking 30 feet or 30 yards away, that's roughly, what, about 90 feet. That's pretty close. And for it to be kind of retreating back into the woods, I'm curious, now that you've had time to think about what happened, why do you think it was smack in the tent?
I don't know. It chose that time during the heaviest rainstorm we've ever seen up there in 20 years. And as dark as it was outside, you know, kind of had that cover to move in. And I think maybe because we were shooting earlier, I took the muzzleloader shot, and then Gabe took maybe two shotgun blasts. And then he had this little 410 that we were, you know, plinking at the plastic bottle in the air with. I think that maybe that, you know, how I've read and seen a lot of shows, hunting shows and stuff, where and you know, they always talk about the bears, like up in Alaska, being attracted to the sound of gunshots. And it's almost like ringing a dinner bell. You know, they come in quickly because they think, you know, they hear the shot and think maybe they can come in and claim a fresh carcass, you know, like an easy meal or something. And if maybe they can even tell the difference between a centerfire rifle shot and a shotgun sound, and the shotguns usually would be used for birds, and maybe they like the small game. You know, I bet they, you know, pick up lost birds or lost rabbits or things that people can't find in the brush, maybe.
Yeah,
I would think that they're probably I don't know, I'm no expert on them, but are they meat eaters or plant eaters or omnivores?
Yeah, the reports I get are both. I've gotten both, that they eat both, depending on the witnesses you talk to. But I've seen witnesses, or I've talked to witnesses, I've had them on the show, that have seen them run deer down. I've talked to guys in federal law enforcement. The FBI agent down there in Texas, he wouldn't come on the show because of his career, but he saw them chase down wild hogs and grab them, smash them up against a tree, rip them open, and two of them sit down and start eating right there from the wild hog. And so I think that they eat both. You know, it's smacking on the tent reminds me so much of people's encounters when they talk about these things smacking against their home. And I almost think, I don't know if it's boredom, I don't know if it's really anger or what the intent is, but you hear them do that against people's home, where they'll walk up, smack it, and then kind of retreat, come back 5 or 10 minutes later, smack it again, retreat. And you hear that behavior over and over and over again with people's homes. And then here you're in a tent and you're experiencing the same behavior.
Yeah, well, whatever it was, had to know that we were there, I think. Do you think they have a pretty well pronounced sense of smell, like a bear would have?
I think so. I think they tend to watch. In your situation, if I were to guess, you know, when you have three guys show up, it kind of changes the game a little bit. I mean, now it's maybe three against one, even though it could probably rip all three of you from limb to limb. It changes the game, I think, with these things. I think when you show up with a group of people, they'll tend to leave. And if there's one or two guys, you might have an encounter. If you're by yourself, you're probably going to have an encounter with these things. But the moment you start bringing in two, three guys, everyone's armed, I probably figured it's time to go at this point. When you saw the creature retreating, how would you compare it to the Patterson-Gimlin film?
The way it was kind of just strolling through, it was traveling right to left through the lodgepole pines, you know, kind of in front of them and behind them, traveling between the trees, just kind of strolling, you know, swinging, arms are swinging, long footsteps, and then it kind of turned, quartering away, and I could see its head and shoulders and back clearly as it, before it kind of sunk down below the thing. I felt like maybe it was being kind of territorial or something and kind of warning us, like by whacking on the tent, saying, hey, I'm here, you know.
Could be.
And then when Matt came walking through there, I'm thinking he must have walked right past it, you know.
to get into camp because it was probably still on behind the tent back there in the trees. And when Matt walked through there, and then it took off. So when I looked up at, I could see the tent, it kind of traveled behind the tent, you know, 30 yards back in the trees and down and away. And I'm kind of surprised that after seeing that, I'm surprised I kind of went after it. I don't know what I was thinking, but I think I just wanted to confirm that, yeah, that's what I saw, or, you know, try to cut it off and get a better look at it and see if that's truly what I saw, you know, because I couldn't believe what I saw. So I still can't. But.
Yeah, and that says a lot to that. I was going to ask you what compelled you to get up and go after this thing.
I don't know.
Go chase it.
I don't know. You know, because I wasn't feeling fear, I guess. Yeah. If it had really been howling and throwing rocks and stuff and, you know, shaking the tent and kind of, I'm sure I wouldn't have gone after it, but it was just sort of messing with us, you know, I think. And it, the lure of the gunshots, I think, might have been because it wasn't long after that, you know, it started on the tent. And I imagine, you know, these things are huge, and so they must need a huge source of protein and calories, thousands of calories a day to, you know, sustain that size. So, you wonder, what are they eating out there, you know?
Yeah.
Something like a loss, you know, if you hit a deer and can't find it, that would be a huge find for them.
Well, and you hear a lot of times, Doug, hunters talk about that, where they'll shoot something, they know they've shot it, they know it's a kill shot, they'll follow the blood trail in, and then the deer, they can tell the deer laid down right there, or the elk laid down right there, and then it's gone. It's just like something picked up and walked off with it. And so I think that they do the same thing as you were talking about earlier with the grizzlies. The grizzlies wait for the gunshots to go off, and then they know they got a quick, easy meal. It's easy pickings. I've talked to so many hunters, even one here in Washington State, that he's a poacher, but he was out there and he said a gorilla picked up his elk and walked off with it. And the elk out here in Washington State, I've said this a million times on the show before, they're like small horses, man. You don't pick up an elk and walk off with it. You just don't.
Oh, no. No, you can't even roll it over.
No.
They're 900 pounds. You know?
I wanted to ask you, with regard to this, did you guys pack up and leave, or did you guys stay for the rest of the trip?
No, we stayed, and, you know, it's kind of like, and I'm still wondering why on earth, why would we go back there? And I think it's because we didn't feel fear. You know, I never felt the fear, but I was really puzzled, but I didn't feel afraid. And we've been back there every year since, but I keep my eyes peeled. Always looking at my back trail, you know, and you never know what you're going to see out there. So,
yeah.
And I have a feeling that, you know, I think I was talking to you earlier about walking along in maybe at dusk or twilight or even in the dark when you're heading up to the higher country from your camp, you just get this kind of an impending feeling of like, not doom, but like something's watching me, and hairs will stand on your arms, and the shivers and tingles will go up your spine, and you're just wondering, whoa, and you stop in your tracks and you really look around you and you're thinking, well, I don't see anything, but that doesn't mean it isn't there, you know.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, because when I was hunting, as you and I were talking, I've had that before. When I was out hunting, and you don't know where to place it, because you always kind of look around for a cougar, you look around for a bear, your normal predators, and there's nothing around there. And, you know, I was never afraid of the dark. I was never afraid of, if I had my gun on me, I wasn't afraid of anything. I would go toe to toe with anything out there, but you do get that weird, when you're out there, you do get that weird from time to time, like something's watching me, and you can't really place it. You can't really, you know, so you tend to brush it off. And I think a lot of hunters do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we have a sixth sense, or is it really, we must, right, to be able to get that feeling. But I imagine I felt that when there was nothing there, just, you know, your mind running away with you. But after you see something like this and you realize it's more than just cougars and bears out there, you get that feeling. You gotta listen to it, you know.
Did you ever talk to your hunting buddies? Did you tell them what you saw?
Oh, yes. Yep. And they, well, Doug, my best bud, he returned that evening, and I told him the story, and he, you know, he didn't really react to it. He must have, I don't know what he thought. And we talked about it a couple times since, so I'm sure he still, it's something about not seeing it yourself, you know, you just, okay. But I did really want to know about Matt. You know, I always kind of had Matt in the back of my mind. And just about 2 years ago, I called Matt. He is no longer hunts with us, but he still kind of goes up on his own sometimes. And I just said, hey, Matt, you know, just I'm writing this story and your name's come up. I want you to know that I'm using your name in this story. And I kind of read him some excerpts from it, just seeing that you would agree with that, if does that sound accurate, and yeah, and stuff. But I said, okay, you didn't see it, but I just need to know it on, you know, if you were to, you know, swear on a Bible, or could you honestly tell me that it was not you that was, you know, pranking us in the tent? And he says, nope, it wasn't me, you know. And swore up and down that he was up on that mountaintop, and which we saw him come down from later anyway. So, yeah, so that kind of cleared my mind of Matt. I was able to write him out of that formula. And so,
yeah, and Matt doesn't make sense. Do you think Matt would say, hey, guys, I was screwing with you guys? You know, I mean, yeah. When you're pranking someone, and there's a lot of pranking that goes on with hunters, and there's a lot of, you know, kind of like brother-type relationships where you torment each other. But the end game is to get a good laugh and say, yeah, it was me. And for him never to say that to you, I mean, that's kind of, I can understand why you would ask him, though, because it's always still in the back of your mind.
Yeah. So, I had to know, and I believe he told me the truth. And so even if it had been him whacking the tent, it doesn't take away what I saw walking through the timber there. And I'm glad it was walking away from what you say. It could have been a lot different. You know, it wasn't an attack or wasn't aggression.
Yeah. I guess
podcasts where they're throwing rocks, and that sounds about as scary as it can get. You know, they're moving in on you and all of a sudden the rocks come flying and the howling and the tree branch breaking and I don't know.
Yeah, and it seems like with hunters, sometimes when they come into your camp like that, like the Teddy Roosevelt story, where it came in, it was tormenting these guys. Basically, I think it was, I tend to agree with you, it might have been territorial, but it was coming in, messing with these guys, wanting them to move along. They didn't move along, and I think it was day two or day three, they ended up taking a shot at this thing, or his buddy did, and one of the guys lost their lives, but maybe it is territorial that they come in like that. And I'm just glad you got a glance at what's out there. You know, it changes your mind when you go out. Now when you're hunting, it's not so much cougars and deer and elk and bear. You realize there's more out there than just the known animals.
Yep. And a lot of people ask me, did you get a picture of it? And of course, even if I had a camera or a phone on me, I probably wouldn't have had time to take a picture of it, but it's been in my mind for all this time. And I'm a painter, and I do canvas work with oils and acrylics and things. So I decided to paint a canvas of it from my mind's eye, and it actually turned out pretty good. My wife took a photo of it and sent it to you on your cell phone number, so I don't know if you had a chance to look at that yet, but every time I look at the thing, it just like, oh, God. Yeah, I don't. Did you happen to get that?
No, I don't think I did. Could you have her resend it to me, or maybe email it to me?
I will do that again. You bet.
And yeah.
I'd like to hear what you think of that.
I wanted to ask you, did it look more human-like, or did it look more ape-like as it walked off? I guess it's kind of an odd question, but
It was not knuckle walking, but I kind of had an impression of a odd similarity with color and shape of a silverback gorilla, kind of that same huge back, you know, with the hair length and the color, and yet it was quite tall, so it was standing perfectly upright, but so it wasn't like throwing its knuckles down and swinging its lower legs underneath or anything like that. It was on 2 feet walking through the kind of the small ears out on the side. I kind of wish it had turned around. That would have probably really startled me, but what I painted here is exactly what I saw, and I thought it came out pretty good. And so as far as having a photo of it, this is my photo, and I'd like to get
that. And that's
that.
Understandable. I mean, when you're in those situations, you're not thinking, hey, I'm going to break out the camera and start snapping pictures. It's not what's on your mind.
Right.
And most people who run into these things, that's not what's on. I've had researchers that had cameras around their neck that have run into them and never thought for 2 seconds to snap a picture. I mean, you think out of anyone, they would be the ones to snap a picture, and they don't.
Yeah. And even videos and photos of them doesn't prove much to a lot of people anyway. So, seems like that's not the evidence people are looking for. You know, they'd probably rather have a body or something, but I didn't have a gun, and I probably wouldn't have shot at it anyway because it wasn't threatening us. But
do you still hunt?
Oh, yes. And my son is still coming up with me now, so now he's older, and I got lucky. It's been quite a few years, but I finally got a bull elk last year, and my family just loves venison, so it helps cut down on the food costs. My son, the following day after helping me haul that out, he wound up getting a buck deer the following day, and I helped him haul that out. So that was a pretty great time. So we love it. Just getting up in the mountains is so great. But like I say, it's kind of changed a little bit, and I go in with my eyes wide open and keep glancing back on my back trail and make, all you can do is just kind of be careful and not try to get yourself. I like the idea of staying with other people. That's always a good idea in the woods, you know, having someone else with you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and you know, when you're out there, like I said, be careful. It's a different perspective when a lion is running away from you as opposed to a lion charging you. You have a different outlook on these things. And I know in your situation, I use a lion as an example, but you know, when you see these creatures fleeing or making their way to the exit, it doesn't seem that intimidating. But it's a whole different story when they turn around, they come back and they're not looking to exit. They're not looking to leave. And it becomes a major, major problem. And you know, if you run into them again, treat it like you would a grizzly bear or a black bear. Just be cautious and, you know, slowly back out of the area is the only advice I would give you. Shoot if you have to. Don't hesitate to shoot if you have to.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I think if you back away, they'll back off. And that's
you've heard a lot
opinion.
Of hunters probably talk about it. What about with lions? You're not supposed to look them in the eye because that's perceived as a threat. And so you just kind of look at the ground, but you do talk to them, I guess, and back away, like you said. Would you do that with a Sasquatch, do you think? Not look them in the eye? Would that?
If I was face-to-face with one, I would probably do whatever I could to back out of the situation and not initiate a fight. Because I think the moment you fire off a shot, you're in bed with it at that point. You're going to have to kill that thing at this point. Whether it kills you or you kill it, you're in bed with it. The moment you pull that trigger, you're in bed with it, and you have to finish the game. I think if I were to run into one, I'd try and get video of it, but I say that, but you know, that might be a different story once you come face to face with these things. Everyone's a hero until you come face to face with them, and then all of a sudden no one's a hero anymore. Honestly, I would probably back away. I would treat it the same way I would a grizzly bear. I'd probably quietly try and move out of the situation, remove myself from the situation if I came face to face with them again. Because from doing this show, I can tell you, and talking to a lot of witnesses, the behavior is kind of across the board. Sometimes they'll exit. Sometimes they'll leave. Sometimes they won't. Sometimes they will push and push and push. And I do think people do get killed by these things. And I think the people who generally get killed by these things are hunters and hikers. Hunters, I think, run into these things. And I think that these creatures are out doing the exact same thing as the hunters. They're getting food. And so there's kind of this altercation that generally happens with hunters because you don't want this thing in the area. It doesn't really want you in the area. And you guys are both competing for the same food. And so I think that's why there's a lot of altercations with hunters and these things. But to answer your question, I would try and back away like I would a grizzly bear. I would try and avoid the fight at all costs.
Good advice.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, never go alone, you know, and you'll have to keep me up to date as far as what happens out there with you guys hunting in the area. I'm curious if, I don't know that you saw an older one. I've had reports of them being gray, and I'll ask that specific question. Do you feel like it was an older creature? And 9 times out of 10, people will say no. I feel like it was, this thing was ripped out like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It didn't appear to be
very
old and brittle. Yeah.
Mm. Wow. Okay.
But you'll have to keep me up to date. Let me know if anything else happens out there, will you, Doug?
I sure will. Yeah. Thanks so much for taking the time.
No, thank you for coming on.
Get this off my chest. Yeah. Feels good.
No. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
All right. You have a good one.
You too. And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Until next time, everyone.
Something acquired with the lights on.